Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Simon Hughes in London, Simon Mann in Sydney, and I'm sorry if I sound a little bit bleary-eyed. I'm getting a bit tired having to get up in the early morning to watch all this and stay up late at night. I'm sure you're feeling highly bushy-tailed, Simon, after 4 days of work at the Sydney Cricket Ground for both TV and radio, trying to talk up England's performances. And actually today, there is a bit of a chink of light at the end of the day after a fairly gruelling fourth day. England survived to the close.
Yeah, they did. Hamid and Crawley actually survived without a great deal of alarm. There was one ball from Scott Boland that took off outside the off stump, just outside the off stump. And good fortune for Crawley, took the shoulder of the bat and went over the slip cord. And actually, one feature of this game so far is we have seen some uneven banks. We have seen balls jump alarmingly at times, but they haven't really taken any wickets. Normally you see players gloved and the ball goes out to gully or goes to short leg, but we haven't seen any of that. I wonder if that's going to change on the final day. Having said that, I listened to Usman Khawaja on BT Sport, his interview afterwards, and he was saying he thought the pitch had settled down a bit. After his first innings 100, he said it was a difficult pitch. After today's 100, he said, yeah, I just thought the pitch had settled down a bit and, you know, we're going to have to work really hard and tough it out tomorrow to try and get the 10 wickets that we need to win the game. So I thought that was quite interesting. That was my sort of rather unscientific sort of view about the pitch today. It didn't seem to have quite as many terrors in it as it's had on the second and third day. Not exactly terrors, but, you know, there was that doubt always in the batter's mind. You think of Milan, say, being hit on the glove twice before he was dismissed. Bairstow wrapped on the glove, the one that forced him off the field today. So perhaps it is just, I don't know. I don't know why it would do that, because normally when you get an uneven bounce, it just gets more uneven as the game goes on. But it did seem to just settle down a little bit today.
There could be a number of reasons for that, speculatively, really, I suppose. But the number of times it's rolled, the heavy roller does deaden the impact. Actually, the number of balls bowled on a particular spot can just make the grass, the surface, lose its springiness as well over time because of the relentlessness of the bowling. And pitches do just sort of slow down, don't they? But anyway, England have to a massive battle on their hands to survive the final day. What's the weather forecast, you reckon? Will they get the whole day's play in?
Well, this is the issue. It could well be that England do get some help from the weather. The problem with the Sydney weather forecast is that they don't actually seem that accurate. I mean, people could say there's rain around, and it's a big metropolitan area, Sydney, so, you know, and quite close to the Pacific. So I think it's quite hard to really nail down, really specific weather forecast, and there is weather around tomorrow. That, and there has been some rain tonight. Actually, just as the players came off, it started to rain. There was rain this morning, but we had actually had a perfect day today. But there is talk of bad weather tomorrow. It has been a test match. It's not been blighted by bad weather, but there has been enough to cause frustration. I think one thing I would say, I was actually 98 overs on the final day because we're still making up a little bit of time. What would be good from England's perspective is if they had no or little help from the weather tomorrow, but were able to save the game. Is that being overly optimistic? I think it probably is. Usman Khawaja also saying that, you know, he felt there would be 10, 12 chances out there for Australia. And yeah, you can see that happening. Lyon might come into the game a bit more, but there was a little lack of sparkle from Australia this evening, a little lack of zip from Cummins and from Stark. So, you know, fair play to Hamid and Crawley. They have produced England's highest opening partnership of the series, 30. Previously it was 23, and actually they're the second highest partnership in the last 10 Ashes test matches. I mean, it just shows how tough it has been for the openers.
Or how bad our openers are, I suppose.
Well, that is another way of looking at it, yeah.
And also, actually, how good Australia are with the new ball as well. You know, very potent attack. I mean, Cummins must be one of the best fast bowlers Australia has ever produced. He's number one ranked bowler in the world, and there's a reason for that. And he's outstanding. He just never lets you get away, does he? And I remember his first test in South Africa, and you know, he was the absolute howitzers he was sending down, which was swinging late as well, and he was man of the match in that test. And then nobody heard from him for about 5 years because of injury. But you know, he always had that potential. But what has happened in the meantime is he's become this laser-guided missile. Every ball is right on the spot, and he's really refined his bowling method. I mean. Quite interestingly, you know, you always talk about bowlers needing to move the ball away from the right-handed batsman to take wickets in Test cricket, and he largely moves the ball in. And I think we had Dean Headley on the Virtual Cricket Club a while ago, talking about the Ashes and talking about bowling in Australia and talking about trends in bowling and more bowlers looking to make the ball move back at the batsman rather than away, which is an increasing trend, and Cummins has been one of the leaders of that.
Yeah, he's done that more than any other bowler in this series, brought the ball back in to the right-handers. And you look at his record, he's playing in his 37th test match. He's taken 176 wickets. He started this test match taking his wickets at 21. I mean, that is absolutely top class, that is. You think, I mean, Jimmy Anderson, who's got all the bag of wickets, takes his at 26. Okay, Cummins doesn't have that longevity, and he, you know, has had his injury problems right at the start of his career, but you know, he was bowling 90 at the age of 17. That's bound to take a bit of a toll on your body, and it did. Now he's sort of strengthened up, he's sort of grown into his body, and he's, you know, his record is excellent. You know, he could finish as one of the, you know, Australia's, you know, great bowlers. I mean, he's a handful, but nothing from Cummins tonight. And there was one tremendous shot from Crawley down the ground, just showing his quality. It's one of those, I think, sort of frustrating things about Zach Crawley is that he's got the shots, and you think you can see why people are enthusiastic about him, and then he gets out, you know, and he's, yeah. I mean, he's, so great challenge for him tomorrow.
Yeah, totally. And in fact, Graham Thorpe, it was a Graham Thorpe night, wasn't it, to wheel out the head coach or batting coach in his case tonight. And
no, assistant coach. Said, assistant coach. Yeah, sure.
And he said, you've got to make good decisions. That's the key to batting. And that's what Crawley doesn't do, hasn't done recently. You know, for example, the first innings of this test where he tried to drive the ball, which wasn't quite full enough, and it nipped back through the gate and bowled him. This innings, he waited for the fuller ball from Cummins and played the same shot, but to a slightly fuller delivery, and it went for four. So it is about recognising the right shot to play for a particular ball in particular circumstances. If he's batting at Trent Bridge, say, on a beautiful day and the ball's 40 overs old, you can hit the ball on the up from just outside off stump. But on a pitch like Sydney's against the new ball with a bowler largely nipping the ball back, this was Scott Boland in this case in the first innings, it's just a risky shot to try and hit the ball on the up so early in the innings with the ball fairly new. So, you know, you've got to learn to play the right shots at the right times.
Just one thing, I came to the ground this morning. You go past the nets or near the nets when you go to the media centre. And a lot of players are, you know, practicing in the middle or whatever, warming up in the middle. In the nets this morning, two players, one from Australia and one from England. The Australian player, Marnus Labuschagne. The England player, Zach Crawley, in the nets talking to the coach. He's trying to work something out. And actually, we saw that from Labuschagne today. He was trying to work something out. And that was just to get a bit further over to try to combat Mark Wood. But Wood had the wood over him again. It's the third successive time he's dismissed him. He's nicked him off three times in a row now. I think Labuschagne was trying to work that out, trying to get across a bit further. But and it worked for a while, actually. He played quite nicely early on in his innings, but then Wood nicked him off a ball that was relatively wide, playing at a ball perhaps he didn't need to play at. And Ollie Pope taking one of four catches. And that's, there's another tale there, Yoz, for England. Is how's England's team going to configure for the next test match in Hobart? The fact today that there was no Butler and there was no Bairstow, and they've called up Sam Billings, who's had to drive all the way down from Queensland, about a 10-hour drive. And he can't fly because of social distancing. And when he gets to the hotel in Sydney today, he's got to have isolate for a bit and then have a test. And then he's released into the wild, if you like. So there's all that situation. What are England going to do? I mean, presumably, if Bairstow does have a finger problem, that he's not going to be fit for the next Test match, and therefore couldn't keep. I mean, if Butler was out, and you think, well, Bairstow's going to keep them. Well, if neither of those can keep, then you imagine that Sam Billings is going to make his Test match debut. And we're still nearly a week away from the next game.
With Ollie Pope slotting into the middle order. I mean, he kept really well. I mean, those four catches, a couple of them were really good. The one off the drive of, I think it was Marcus Harris, caught behind off Jack Leach. That was a good catch because it was very full and the ball did deviate off the edge and he had no time to react to it. And also that sort of acrobatic catch off Alex Carey's attempted sweep, where it's a ricocheted off various bits of his body and glove and stuff. And he had to acrobatically do a sort of mini somersault to get the ball, and he took that one as well. I thought he did well.
Yeah, I suppose it depends who's fit, doesn't it? I mean, if there's no Stokes, no Butler, and no Bairstow, which is not impossible, then there are quite a few spots open. I don't know what England are going to do about the balance of their side, because of course that was one of the problems they had in the summer when Leach didn't, Jack Leach couldn't play or Don Best couldn't play because they couldn't really balance the side because they didn't have they didn't have the all-rounder option with Ben Stokes in the side. At least it allows them to play the spinner if they want to in this series. Anyway, I mean, I would have thought logically, I mean, the most logical, I'm just trying to think really, really you'd want Pope to come into the side as a batter, wouldn't you? If there is no Bairstow, Butler and Stokes, and therefore Billings keeps wicket. But there's a lot to decide before we get to there. It may well be that Butler can't play and Bairstow is okay to play. He had an X-ray overnight. It was a strange one. He did an interview this morning. He said, it almost doesn't matter whether it's broken or not. It's what it is. I don't know. Perhaps he does know what the situation is. But he did not feel today. He went out to bat. 113. He was just trying to dab. It was a frustrating dismissal. Actually, he tried to dab one into the offside, just looking to make something happen, and nicked it through to the keeper. But he didn't come out and field. But I mean, in a way, it's fifth Test match. The series is gone. It could well be 4-0 going to Hobart. It might be quite interesting to have a look at one or two different players. I mean, Dan Lawrence perhaps comes into the equation as well. He's been here, as a middle order option for the whole tour. Hasn't got a look in, of course, yet. So I mean, England have options, but do they have balance if they are missing those key players? I mean, they are quite key players as well, aren't they? I mean, no Bairstow, no Stokes, no Butler. We're making a presumption, of course, but I mean, Ben Stokes did field for the majority of the day, but he was fielding it long on. He was running around the boundary, throwing the ball in, wincing with that side problem.
He's a masochist. That's what he is, isn't he? I mean, his pain seems to be kind of following him around wherever he goes, and he seems to overcome it, doesn't it? It's amazing, really. He's like he seems almost bionic somehow.
Yeah, well, he stayed out in the field, and obviously, someone. And the only situation there is, of course, is that Butler and Bairstow well, Butler's at seven anyway, but Bairstow can bat in their normal position because they were clear injuries sustained in the game, you know, two hand injuries. They're called external injuries in a way, but they're not. I mean, every injury is internal, isn't it, sort of, I suppose, unless you can see a cut on someone's head. But Stokes is a muscle strain, and that's seen as an internal injury. So if he hadn't been in the field, he wouldn't have been able to bat until number seven because he'd been off the field for a hugely long time. He wouldn't have been able to bat until he'd served the time that he was off the field. So presumably they still want him to bat at five rather than come in at number seven. So that is, I imagine, is why he was fielding. He might have also said, yeah, I just want to be out there. You know, this is perhaps my last time in the field in this series. I want to support the captain and go for it and sort of grit it out. But it's hard to see him playing in Hobart, really. I mean, you're not going to make a recovery. You know this from certainly not to bowl, but you're probably not going to make a recovery to bat properly at Hobart as well. And it's only going to exacerbate the injury. So, you know, with the series not in the balance, it's inconceivable, really, that he was going to play in the game. And I think what the other thing to say is, Yoz, is that, you know, Butler's hand injury must be a bit more serious than we initially thought. I mean, he did take the blow on the hand from that low ball from Wood. He continued to keep wicket, but he didn't keep wicket today. And we saw Ollie Pope taking the gloves in practice yesterday, and it was a bit of an indication that something was amiss with Josh Butler. You know, it was more serious than we thought. So perhaps he's had an X-ray and they found a broken bone in the hand.
It's like 74-5 when England returned from that battering in the Ashes against Lillian Thompson, the walking wounded returning to England. And actually, I remember players saying, a bit like actually when they returned from the West Indies a few times in the 1980s as well, there was this sort of glazed look in players' eyes, you know, as if, not exactly this, as if they'd been at war, but kind of similar, like it had been on some kind of military campaign and, you know, seen some quite scary things. And this is the same sort of situation. They're going to be coming back with carrying all sorts of injuries. Going to be a bit of a rabble, aren't they, when they return?
Well, the only thing I would say about that is that I suppose Bairstow was the only one that was from a brute of a ball, one that banked. The other, Butler was one, just an unfortunate one where he just turned his hand a bit too early before the ball went into his gloves. It was a difficult one to judge, a scuttler from Wood, and the Stokes one was done bowling, wasn't it? A side strain. But, you know, it could be not all change for Hobart, but there could be quite a few changes. I mean, Australia themselves have got some selection situations to sort out. I mean, Travis Head was the hero of their first Test victory. And is he going to get back in the side? Cameron Green scored runs today. And Usman Khawaja, it's taken us a while to get onto Khawaja. We did touch on his interview, but, you know, another 100. 101 not out. And actually, there was a bit of pressure. I mean, in a way, by the end, it felt like easy runs. You know, you know what it's like on what I call a declaration day, and that's what it was today. They're quite unsatisfying days in Test match cricket. But at the start, there was some pressure. Australia were 86 for four, and England just didn't quite have the wherewithal to ram it home. You know, suddenly, if they'd lost another two wickets, it would have been a lead of about 210 with six down, and then the pressure might have built on Australia, and also might have just halted their procession towards a declaration as well. It might have reduced the amount of time that England had to bat tonight. They might not even have to bat tonight. But as it turned out, they got through and they finished at 30 for no wicket. But I mean, Usman Khawaja, I mean, it is an incredible story, isn't it? That he's only the ninth player in Ashes history to make 200s in an Ashes Test match. And, you know, a week or so ago, he probably didn't even think he'd play in the Ashes.
Yeah, good thoughts about Usman Khawaja there, how unlikely his sudden re-emergence has been. And interestingly, actually, he was talking about before the game that he didn't actually have that much preparation. You know, he'd played a number of games for Queensland a while ago, but for the last month he's been trailing around the squad as a sort of 13th man and hasn't had any outings in the middle. And it just shows, in a way, preparation isn't everything, because he said, actually, my preparation wasn't great and I had a few nets and wasn't hitting the ball that well. And I just felt if I did get the chance to play, I needed some time in the middle just to get the rust out, and that's exactly what happened. He managed to survive first half an hour, and then, you know, the old rhythm started to return, and you know, that is so important for batting, is just to stay in for that first half an hour, and then you can rediscover your batting style, your batting flow, and so on. Now, 200s in an Ashes Test match, as you say, only 9 players have done that, and one of them is in our Ashes Heroes NFT collection. I have ranked the greatest 100 Ashes cricketers from 100 to 1 over the history of the Ashes from 1882, and we've commissioned an artist to do a drawing of each of these players, or to capture the essence of each of these 100 players. I'll talk about how you can bid for these Ashes Heroes NFTs in a bit, but it was quite an interesting exercise ranking them. Getting, you know, there's been a sort of total of over 600 cricketers have played in the Ashes, so how do you boil them down to 100, and then how do you rate them from 100 to 1? It's a challenge, obviously, looking at their performances, their impact on various series, their records, how many Ashes series and tests they've played in that their team has won is relevant. So lots of different factors. It is a bit subjective. So as you say, only 9 players have made 200s in an Ashes Test match, and 2 of those players are in the top 10 of my Ashes Heroes rankings. Who do you think they might be?
Well, one of them is Steve Smith, because I remember he did it at Edgbaston with that, you know, marvellous 100 in the first innings of the first Ashes Test of 2019, when he batted with the tail. And actually, Australia got a few more than they really should have done, and they got up to about 270, and that was enough for them. And the other one, well, it's a sort of a straightforward question in a way, Yoz, because Andy Zaltzman went through the 9 who've done it, and so I've got the list in front of me. So I reckon the other, well, I mean, here's the list of players who've scored 2 Ashes hundreds in a match. Arthur Morris, I mean, some big names. It's a great list for Khawaja to be on. Arthur Morris, Matthew Hayden, Steve Smith, Wally Hammond, Herbert Sutcliffe, Dennis Compton, Steve Waugh, and Warren Bardsley. Those are he's the least known, I would say. The other ones are, you know, top class players, all, you know, really well known Ashes players, Test players. Yeah. So so you're asking me who's in the top 10?
Of those?
Well,
yeah.
Okay. Well, Smith's had a fantastic record, hasn't he? In Ashes matches.
Yeah, Smith's in the top 10. Absolutely so right. He's made 11 Ashes hundreds, incredibly. Yeah.
Well, the
averaging in the 60s in Ashes Tests.
Well, the other one, let me think. Well, I mean, Steve Waugh dominated the Ashes, didn't he? So I'm going to go for Steve Waugh as being in your top 10 as well. But that does leave out people like Compton and Hammond and Sutcliffe. Are they in the... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, you're right. In fact, Hammond is also in the top 10, quite right. I mean, Wally Hammond was an amazing cricketer. In any other era, he would have been top dog, you know, the best cricketer in the world. He had an amazing record. He averaged close to 60 in Test cricket. He made 2,200, so he broke the record for England Test hundreds at the time. He made 251 against Australia in an early Test match in 1928. And in a way, it was a misfortune that he made 251 in that Test match, because you know who had also made his debut in that Test? Was a certain Don Bradman.
Yeah.
And Bradman spent a day and a half chasing leather, watching Hammond crash it all around. And in a way, that inspired him to even greater heights. So anything that Hammond did in his career, Bradman exceeded. But Hammond was amazing. 33 Ashes Test matches to nearly 3,000 runs, 900s, average 51. So, you know, tremendous Ashes hero. Steve Waugh, you mentioned as well. Actually, I remember interviewing him after that second 100 at Old Trafford in the Test match. And I was working for BBC at the time, and I was a sort of pitch side reporter, and I interviewed him after the game. And I think he was actually not out overnight. And he came out sort of almost immediately and did the interview, which was quite rare in those days. You normally didn't get somebody who was still batting to do the interview. And he came straight out and did the interview. And he just said, oh, you know, terrible pitch, really difficult pitch, really tough. He'd made 200s on it. But I think that it wasn't actually that bad a pitch, really. But he made it. He transmitted a message. This is an absolute minefield. And England batted appallingly on the final day and lost. So it was a clever bit of psychology from Steve Waugh. But, you know, amazing record he had. 46 Ashes test matches, 10 hundreds, an average of 58. And also, he played in 9 Ashes series and won 8 of them. So a remarkable performance. The only Ashes series he played in which he didn't win was that first 86-7 when he made his debut and Gatting's tour, and they won the Ashes. And he played in a couple of those test matches and sort of batted low down the order. But after that, he won every Ashes series, either as player or captain.
So those people who are trying to work out who are in your top 10 Ashes heroes of all time. So you've named 3, haven't you? You've named Hammond and Steve Waugh and Steve Smith. So it's up to people to guess who they think the other 7 are. Now, you're going to sort of give them a clue now, aren't you? Because you're going to sort of show the sort of qualification or the standard you need to obtain, because you're going to give us 20 to 11, aren't you? These are players.
Yeah.
These are players 20 to 11. So
yeah.
By sort of process.
These are players 20 to 11. So counting down: Mark Waugh 20, Stuart Broad gets in 19. Very good Ashes record, and you know, consistent wicket taker. Obviously, he's actually higher than Jimmy Anderson in the rankings because he has taken more Ashes wickets and at a lower average. So even though, you know, Anderson is regarded as a greater bowler overall, Broad actually has had more impact on the Ashes. Boycott at 18, lower than he would like. Len Hutton, 17. I couldn't really put Hutton below Boycott. I mean, Hutton was obviously at the time when he first played against Australia, he made 364 not out at the Oval, which was the highest score in Test cricket ever made, and a phenomenal batsman, won the Ashes as captain in 53 as well. Greg Chappell at 16, a fantastic player. Herbert Sutcliffe, you mentioned, one of the people who made 200s in a test, at 15, an average of 60 in Test cricket overall. And famous partnership with Jack Hobbs, of course, opening partnership that lasted for many years. They averaged, Hobbs and Sutcliffe averaged 87 as an opening pair. What England would give for an opening pair like that? Adam Gilchrist at 14, phenomenal, a sort of scimitar, you know, wielding his bat like a scimitar and slashing all bowlers to ribbons. Ricky Ponting at 13, whose actual Ashes record wasn't quite as good as his overall record. The leading run maker of all time for Australia, of course. W.G. Grace gets in at number 12 for obvious reasons, just an absolute icon of the game and an incredibly powerful figure. And our friend David Gower at number 11, who scored 9 Ashes hundreds and won 4 out of 8 series and was an absolute god at the crease, certainly in Australian eyes, because they really respected him hugely. So that's my 20 to 11, and I'll reveal the top 10 in a subsequent podcast during the final test. So all these players are, as I say, ranked from 100 to 1. Each of them has their own NFT, non-fungible token, a piece of digital art, which you can buy. They're relatively cheap value. They might increase in value over time. It's a new thing, the NFT. Collins Dictionary made NFT the word of 2021. It's something to get interested in if you're interested in sort of technology and digital assets and so on. They're sort of collectibles, a bit like actually the Panini stickers, which we all were familiar with as football fans and cricket fans growing up in the sort of 70s and 80s. You know, those stickers that you used to collect and sometimes get autographed. So it's a sort of digital version of that. And you can have a look at the collection if you go to ashesheroes.com.
So I had a go at guessing your top 10 and I didn't get them all. So it's not quite as straightforward. We've given you 3 already. There's 2 or 3 that are really obvious and you can guess yourself. But yeah, before we reveal them in a later podcast, around about the time of the Hobart Test match or during the Hobart Test match, have a think about who could be in the top 10 after Yozza has eliminated 20 to 11. Just one note, I mentioned Warren Bardsley earlier. as you know, he's in the list of players that have made two Ashes hundreds in the same match. I know Compton and Steve Waugh, Molly Hammond and Sutcliffe, and Usman Khawaja did it today, and Steve Smith and Matthew Hayden and Arthur Morris. You might ask, Warren Bardsley. Well, he was an Australian Test cricketer who played 41 Test matches between the years 1909 and 1926. He was a left-hander. He was born in Sydney. And there you go. I don't think anyone was expecting that we would mention Warren Curly Bardsley tonight, but he's in the list of players who've done the same thing as Usman Khawaja and those other greats of the game. So, you know, fantastic for Khawaja tonight. He said afterwards he's really sore because he said, you know, I've just been sitting around for a few weeks running drinks out and I've had to bat for two full days just about and also field for a full day as well. But fantastic achievement from him. How do you think this game will play? What's your hunch, Yoz, then? We should just finish with that. What's your hunch about the way this game will finish tomorrow? Have England got a chance of surviving for a foolish day?
They have got a chance of surviving. I think it does depend a little bit how the pitch plays, actually. I think Nathan Lyon's going to be a factor. He's going to get some bounce and spin. And, you know, there's a couple of left-handers who he can focus on as well. Stokes, Milan, etc. So Australia have got the armoury to do it. England are going to have to fight like hell if they get a whole day's play in. My hunch is England are going to lose, but I will be so happy for them if they manage to hold out. So I'd give England a 20% chance of survival. What about you?
Well, I think they'll need some help from the weather to survive. But the only problem is, of course, if there's weather around and, you know, it's overcast and the lights are on, then the batting conditions are going to be quite tricky. In today's batting conditions, I'd give them a little bit of a chance because I think it was, you know, it was quite good for batting today. But I agree with Khawaja. I can see Australia, if there's a reasonable amount of play, creating 10 or 12 chances, and you know you might need 12 because you might be a catch or two or half chance that goes down. England did grit it out in Adelaide, didn't they? They really showed some grit in Adelaide, and they've, you know, to be fair to them in this Test match, they've given it a go. You know, they haven't hoisted the white flag. They've actually, they are in the sort of best position in the series. I mean, they're not in a great position, but this is the best position they've been in this series because they've still got all 10 wickets, second innings wickets in hand, going into the final day of the match. This is the closest you feel they'll get to, or it is the closest they've got to saving a game in this series. Forget about winning it. I mean, that's gone. Even Graham Thorpe, the evening acting coach, said, you know, we can't win the game. We're looking to draw it. It's just too far off. I was in Chennai when India chased 387 to beat England, and an incredible Test match, in which actually, sort of coincidentally, or is it a coincidence? But anyway, in that game, Andrew Strauss made 200s in the match and finished on the losing side. I don't imagine that's going to happen to Usman Khawaja. But he was saying, you know, funny things happen in the game of cricket, but that's sort of cricketer's superstition, isn't it? Just covering yourself. But yeah, you'd back Australia, especially if there's enough cricket tomorrow. Bit of weather, and then, yeah, perhaps England have got a chance of escaping with a draw.
Well, I'm sorry, but Usman Khawaja has made too late a bid to be included in the top 100 Ashes heroes, but there is scope for a couple of men who are in that list. One of them, of course, is Ben Stokes. Another one is Joe Root. They can show some real fight tomorrow and maybe go up the rankings, go up the Ashes heroes rankings if they manage to get England holding out for a draw. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow to review how that went. And also, just have a look, if you want to have a bit of fun, have a look at that Ashes Heroes collection, ashesheroes.com. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.